Some argue that we should eat organic foods that have been grown locally. Sounds reasonable. But the fact is, some organic foods are not local at all. This leads us to ask, which is more important to the security of our food chain, food that is local or food that is organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 484th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuning in. We stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Michael Williams on the boards. Hello, Michael.
Good morning.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hey there, Michael.
Folks, a few short years ago, food that was organic was also food that was local. I mean, that's just the way it was. But something happened along the way, and today, food that is organic might well come from, well, China. This leads us to ask, which is more important to the security of our food chain, food that is local or food that is organic? Here to help us ruminate on the question, we have two farmer authors. Now, these are people who actually farm and then write about farming. Indeed, two people who are truly outstanding in their fields. First of all, Michael Abelman, who is the author of From the Good Earth and On Good Land and Fields of Plenty. He's also the CEO of the Center for Urban Agriculture at Fairview Gardens in Goleta, California. Michael, welcome to the Food Chain.
Nice to be with you, Michael.
Hey, last time we worked together, I think I did a Food Chain show from your equipment shed at Fairview Gardens. I remember the door was open and hummingbirds were flying past and we were doing live radio from out there. It was a great
time. I remember that. Yeah, that was a great moment, yeah.
It was a Bioneers conference we were having at your farm.
That's right, yeah.
What a beautiful place that is right there in the middle of Goleta, California. But since then, I guess you've moved on a little bit. You've moved up north and you come out with a new book, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm still acting director of the center, the nonprofit that's based at that farm, but I'm now involved with a family farm project in British Columbia, which is where I'm speaking to you from. And so we have 126 acres of farmland up here in the Gulf Islands.
Wow. So. Farming in paradise, right?
It's a beautiful area, and, you know, California, in terms of our ability as a family to own land became, and actually to farm it, became very difficult. So we found a wonderful spot where we could afford to be, and it's great. I'm still quite involved with the project down there as well, though.
Well, also, you came out with a new book, and you did a lot of traveling for the new book. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I took a really remarkable journey with my 24-year-old son, this was a couple of years ago, across the U.S. and some in Canada, visiting individuals who had not only mastered the production of certain signature products, but who were also using their farms as platforms for social and ecological change and for education. And we documented this journey, this kind of conversation that I had with my colleagues across the country in this wonderful storytelling book that came out this past November called Fields of Plenty. And it's really, it was really enlightening to see what was happening across the country and to hear people's stories and to see the incredible ingenuity and creativity that is now being applied to growing food in various regions across the country.
Always what I enjoy most about visiting individual farmers is their is how they adapt to their farm to the world and make things work. Also with us today, we have Steve Sprinkle, who is also an author of the Transition column in Acres USA. Been an organic farmer down in Ventura, California for over 30 years, and also the proprietor of a restaurant called The Farmer and the Cook. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. What's for dinner at the Farmer and the Cook today?
Veggie burgers.
Veggie burgers, huh?
Soup and salad.
Oh, gosh. It sounds so good. Because I suppose that's really local food that we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, we have our own farm, and we grow in season between 20% and 40% of everything that we sell. And the salad bar is designed around what we can produce as well. And, of course, since we're a grocery store as well, we have things that are shipped in from far away,
mm-hmm.
like bananas and
sure.
and apples from... But we don't. We found a lot of local apples locally, so it's not.
So you try to do as much locally as possible, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. We buy from a lot of local farms and gardeners here, and then we go out and verify their growing practices. But by no means it's tantamount to certification.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get involved with a very interesting question, or at least one I find interesting, but. What it gets right down to is most of us in the world just eat what is put in front of us and don't think twice about it. And it really doesn't matter to those of us who are not thinking about it whether an apple was grown, where it was grown or how it was grown. It's just an apple, and an apple is an apple, so we eat it and we don't think about it. So I'd like to ask both of you why we should think about what we eat. Michael, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there are many reasons on many different levels. I mean, certainly a lot of people have responded to and continue to respond to their personal food choices based on personal health concerns that have revealed themselves quite dramatically regarding the way our industrial food system is carrying itself out and how food is coming to us, and some of the personal health issues regarding pesticides and herbicides.
So if we are what we eat, then we could well be not very healthy by eating a big who-knows-what cheeseburger from who-knows-where, and it could have an impact on our health.
Well, I think that, I mean, this is certainly the first most you know, obvious level that people respond to, but I think there are... you know, certainly many, many more levels as we get into this thing,
mm-hmm.
Some of which we may no longer have a choice around, and certainly one of them is energy. I mean, I think that the current industrial food system that's shipping food thousands of miles from the field to the plate is going to have to shift simply because it's going to become impossible to support that system via the primary energy source, which is oil. You
know. They say food now travels 2,000 miles from where it is grown to where it is consumed. And 2,000 miles, you know, that's a lot of fuel to ship a carrot long.
That's a lot of fuel, and there's a lot of loss in food quality. And, you know, we simply, you know, this is, I don't think it's going to become a matter of choice. I think this will have to shift because we can't afford to continue to do it this way.
Well, let's go to Steve Sprinkle. Steve, why should people think about what they eat?
Well, I have to agree with Mike entirely about that. Of course, we have a program here that corresponds to that, and a lot of folks have gravitated to our business here, even though a lot of folks told us that we were crazy to have an all-organic vegetarian restaurant and store, but we found it's worked out, and all across the country, that's what you see people responding to, is wanting to know more, especially on a personal level, by going to farmers markets, by participating in community-supported agriculture, mm-hmm. buying clubs.
Well, we see a lot of us like are doing that, of course, but most of us still aren't, but so why should we?
Well, most of us still are, but we've kind of gotten to an exponential level of growth where we're getting not just thousands of people, but millions of people who are participating in consuming and learning more about alternative agriculture. And I think one big measure of it is how many people are interested in growing their own food in their own backyard.
Right. So always as a consideration, if you can do it yourself, it's always better, and it always tastes better, certainly, right?
Yeah.
Well,
and there's some things that of course we can affect here, and we have discussions here with our employees when we have meetings. For instance, I'm selling tomatoes now. They're coming from Culiacan in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're certified organic, and I think it's a believable system. And there's really not much difference between me selling those tomatoes and the bananas that are coming from southern Mexico as well.
Right.
Because they're both trucked up here. They both use the same amount of fuel cost. And so when we think about eating in season, a lot of the reason why we're doing it, of course, is because it's an environmental imposition.
Okay, good. Now this leads us to the essential question of the day, which is more important to the security of our food chain: food that is local, food that is organic. Michael Abelman said an interesting thing in Times, quoted in Times Magazine: "I would rather buy the commercial broccoli grown down the street than the organic that was shipped halfway around the world." So that's kind of where the issue was drawn in an article by Steve Sprinkle in Acres USA. And I thought, gosh, that's an interesting question. So we have both of these gentlemen here to talk about it with us today. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And invite you to participate, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Do stay tuned.
Hello.
Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Folks, a short time ago, food that was organic was also food that was local. But today, that food, organic food, could well come from China. This leads us to ask, which is more important to the security of your food chain? That's your food chain. Food that is local or food that is organic? I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Here with us on The Food Chain, we have Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle. Gentlemen, you know, when I talked with people about doing this program, every one of them said, what do you mean the choice between local and organic? I want both. Why can't I have both? Aren't they the same? Well, aren't they the same anymore? Michael Abelman?
Well, I mean, they're not necessarily the same, but I think we can have both. I think that, you know, you quoted that quote that was in the LA Times,
mm-hmm.
Which raised the ire of some of my colleagues.
I bet. All kinds of people were hooting and hollering over that one, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the quote was part of a one-hour conversation taken out of context, but I stand by it, and I stand by it because I think that we have forgotten that the most vital aspect of a healthy food system is actually relationships. And, the idea of buying food from my neighbor, even when my neighbor may not be living up to my highest standards of how that food should be produced, gives me a relationship with that person, the opportunity to talk about alternatives, the possibility of getting out of this insanity of seeing a significant amount of organic food shipped, from anywhere in the world, including China right now. And I think there's a real cost that we have to weigh in. I think that the choices are there, and there's a lot of great local models of people producing both locally and organically, and
mm-hmm.
I think we should lean towards those and try to support those. But I think we also need to work with our neighbors to change their practices and to grow in ways that we can, you know, feel good about.
Well, Steve Sprinkle, he responded to a quote in the Los Angeles Times from Michael Abelman when he said, I would rather buy the commercial broccoli down the street than the organic that was shipped halfway around the world. And that evidently raised your hackles enough to write a transition column in Acres USA. What got you about that quote, Steve?
Well, by just saying local.
Incidentally, Steve and Michael, you guys have been organic farmers. You're neighbors.
Well, Michael and I were co-founders of the CCUF, California Certified Organic Farmers chapter, in the early 80s here in Santa Barbara County.
So you guys have been farming essentially next door to each other for 30 years,
right? Oh, yeah. We went to
the
farmers market in Santa Barbara together for years.
Yeah. So what was it that touched you about that notion?
Well, that it doesn't really, well, I'd have to agree with Mike. First of all, it's taken out of context. So I don't know what else he said. However, but I know how he feels about everything. But in any case, when someone of Mike's stature says something like that, now that's going to feed into a whole lot of other things that we see going on with competing labels that are out there that don't have the same kind of environmental or food quality assurances that organic has, and organic is held out there as a carrot. It's kind of a funny carrot these days, but it's still a carrot for growers to change their practices because of competition that's coming from overseas. So, for example, here in Ojai, there are really very few organically managed citrus orchards, and one of the big things that's helping us change people's minds is the lure of the organic market.
Sure, the demand from the consumer.
But the local, I mean, everybody's putting their Valencia oranges in bins and sending them to Sunkist and then getting a bill for picking them. So nobody's making any dough out there other than the people who are in the organic trade.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the other hand, we saw, and because organic has gotten to be so popular, it's just caused huge upheavals with the pioneer production families and individuals in California. For example, Tom and Dinesh Willey. I mean, they've been just whipsawed by the introduction of a lot of product that's coming from so-called factory conventional farms to a transition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as someone who has been the certification inspector on William Boldhouse's 6,000 acres of organic carrots, I'm standing in the middle of a quandary because I support what Mike says and the quandary that farmers like Tom and Danessa are in. And then at the same time, imagine all the chemicals that have been taken out of the food stream and the river and in the air because someone like Boldhouse wants to make a transition.
How many acres?
Some of their organic techniques to their conventional farms because they think they work better.
I really think that, and I've always said this, that we need to honor any farm, whatever scale, for getting off the chemical treadmill. But I think that we, and I know Steve and I agree on this, that we didn't get into this to just substitute materials. This was we wanted to redefine the food system as a whole, and to look at every aspect, not just simply the materials we're not using. And I think this is where I come down in favor of really emphasizing local over organic.
Well, let's go to the phones right now, folks. Phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio on the Food Chain. With us today, Michael Abelman, Steve Sprinkle, and Megan. Megan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me pretty well?
Sure can. Fire away.
Okay. I've been listening on the internet. I'm in Missouri. And I had just gotten an email from a friend of mine because she and I have been talking about this very thing. My husband and I are taking over an organic farm here in Missouri this spring.
Mm-hmm.
So the email she sent me is about a farm in South Central Los Angeles that just got an eviction notice on, let's see, I guess they got it Wednesday, that they have to be off this 14-acre farm. It's the oldest urban farm in California. They got a notice from the city that they have to get off of this 14-acre farm that they've been feeding hundreds of families off of by Monday afternoon so that Walmart can start building a Walmart in their neighborhood. So there's some info about how to contact them, I guess. They're going to have a demonstration and ways to contact the mayor's office. And I'm sure you could go online and find a way to contact his office and send an email. No matter where you are in the country, this is the kind of thing that's...
What's the name of the farm?
It's called, the website is called South Central Farmers.
Michael Abelman, do you know anything about
that? Yeah, it's, the site is in front of the food bank, and it's actually traditionally been a community garden site, which was pretty important for a lot of people over many years. Probably one of the largest community garden sites I've seen anywhere.
Probably.
This is a battle that's been going on for quite a while, and certainly an emblematic battle because, as you might imagine, the value of that land for someone like Walmart is very valuable land. And as yet, sadly, we have not been able to establish the same value for local food systems.
Well, Steve Sprinkle, you've been fighting the same situation with respect to your farms for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been involved with this battle. I mean, for a while, Fairview Gardens certainly was, it was zoned for 52 condominiums, and, it was a 12.5-acre farm floating in a sea of tract homes and shopping centers. And we managed to successfully save that farm and protect it in perpetuity, and certainly there have been a number of models elsewhere. At 103rd and Grape in the same community, near not too far away from where you're talking about in Watts, is a wonderful 3-acre site that The Trust for Public Land, along with the local organization, has now locked up and preserved, and that will be farmed for that community.
So we able to preserve a little bit of land. Before we go to the break, I want to ask Megan. Megan, what do you think is the most significant, most important to the security of your food chain, food that is local or food that is organic?
Well, I guess, you know, I have mixed feelings about it because I want to grow organic and I try to buy it as much as I can, but I understand, too, you know, it frustrates me. I think that we have become accustomed to having tomatoes and lettuce in the middle of the winter when that's not necessarily what our region grows. So, but, you know, when I get a bag of lettuce that's organic but it's from Mexico versus a friend that...
So local or organic, hon?
Huh?
Local or organic?
I think local.
All right, sweetie. Thanks for the phone call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, Megan brought up an interesting question before we went to the last break. Down in Los Angeles, they're getting rid of a community garden to put in a Walmart. Well, I'll bet you anything that Walmart's going to be selling organic food. So, which is the most important? That those people in Los Angeles were able to grow their own food, or that they can have access to organic food at Walmart? Scratch your head about that one. And give us a call. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, and we have Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle with us today. Both farmers, organic farmers, and both writers. And so we're chewing over an interesting question that Steve brought up in an article, a Transitions article in Acres USA magazine, in which he quoted Michael Abelman, or at least noted a quote from Michael Abelman in the L.A. Times: "I would rather buy the commercial broccoli grown down the street than the organic that was shipped halfway around the world, and I guess sold at the Walmart store in Watts." Right, Michael Abelman?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the real amazing pieces of evolution of the organic movement to the organic industry that it is today, and that is the fact that Walmart is actually carrying organic food from anywhere at any time. Given the choice, I stand by that quote within the context of knowing my neighbors. I'd rather buy their food. So,
Steve, what about you? Would you rather buy the organic broccoli from Walmart? It just says organic on it, and doesn't matter really where it comes from, but would you rather buy that broccoli than the broccoli that your neighbor grew?
Than my neighbor grew?
Yeah.
Well, I would probably buy my neighbor's broccoli, but it's kind of a question that I don't ever have to answer, so it's kind of hypothetical.
Mm-hmm. Steve has his own
broccoli.
Steve has his own broccoli,
right? Garden in South Central L.A., I imagine probably their practices conform to a kind of gardening or farming that I would agree with, so I would probably be more apt to buy theirs than anything that's found at Walmart, which I don't think I've been in for the last 7 or 8 years. We have to make those same kind of decisions here because we also purchase things. So when my distributor started selling me nothing but, could get nothing but honey from China, that made me go out and work harder to find bulk honey that was produced locally. And when, of course, I'm kind of caught in a very hard spot, because when the first bag of black beans came from China, or certified organic black beans, 50 pounds, came from China, you know, I was really up against a hard spot there. Now what do? I've got three options, and they're all buying stuff from China.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can grow the black beans myself, but I only have 3 acres. So, and no one's growing things like that around here, you know. So the decision making process is very complicated, and I don't know if we really have to talk about it in terms of either or, because I want to have some kind of guarantee that certain kinds of things are not used, that I don't have to deal with a genetically modified crop producer next to me, for example, who's growing pharmacology inputs.
Right. Understand.
So I'm kind of a stickler on standards of production.
Okay, well, let's go to the phones. Folks, as you know, the food chain is media that talks with you and not at you. So pick up your phone today and join us, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Which is more important to the security of your food chain, food that is local or food that is organic? Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle with us today, and you. Let's talk with Tom. Tom, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My comment was that it seems like early on in this whole organic movement that there was conventional family farmers, what we use the term conventional now, who, you know, we speaking as one of those people trying to maintain our family farms for the long term and finding it difficult and looking at, you know, this whole organic thing as maybe a way to go, but by being conventional type growers, I mean, you were like an outcast in that, like, organic community. And what I think what happened right from the start was there was this, like, this division, and I think somebody kind of referred to it, organic became this thing in and of itself instead of looking at what people were really should have been focused on is how do you maintain this agrarian lifestyle, the local agriculture in each area or community. And I think that got way off track a long time ago. And now what you've got is organic has become just, it's another way of product differentiation and labeling, and it doesn't have any real grounding in some kind of philosophy of, you know, stewardship to the earth or the community or some other greater thing like that. You know, and that's kind of gotten lost. And I think that's kind of sad, but it's true. That I think that's what's happened.
Well, Tom, Steve, in his Acres USA article, brought up kind of an interesting point from Columbia University professor Joan Gossow, who said something to the effect that USDA's version of organic is not what we meant. When we said organic, we meant local. We meant being truthful to the ecology of regions.
Right.
That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, but I think, too, also at the same time, and you need to go down that road, take, for instance, the coast of California, any of these coastal valleys, a couple farms, organic or otherwise, would fill the, you know, what you could consume here. I mean, you take a town, a county like Santa Cruz County, very productive, it would only take a couple well-run farms to feed the whole county. And so you can't. And so what would you do then if it was just local production? If the few local guys filled up the local market, you'd have a whole bunch of valuable farmland just sitting there idle. I mean, you've got to have if you're going to use the resources that, you know, that God's given us, you've got to do some kind of transportation of the food eastward.
Well, let's throw that to Michael Abelman. Michael Fairview Gardens sells food in San Francisco, what, 250 miles away? Is that
what
yeah,
we do? For 2 months in the spring, we take our white asparagus to the Ferry Plaza Market. We do it because we can gain enough income in that time to be able to support a lot of other things that we
mm-hmm.
do. It's extremely profitable, and the reality is, you know, the there's a lot of discussion about the sustainability of farms, mostly based on ecology and environmental issues, health issues, but rarely do people talk about the realities that small farmers face in regards to economic sustainability and the well-being of those doing the work. You know? So we do that market because it's extremely profitable and we're well appreciated. And then for the rest of the year, we stay regional and sell to our local markets.
Well,
I think that, you know, it's an important, you know, your callers brought up some good points. I will say that I think that many people in the movement have become much more inclusive and have realized that this is not just about those who are using pesticides and those who are not, and that each of us is on one side or the other of the line. I think that there's been a real effort to look at the broader issues. Good. And I think that attitude has shifted considerably.
Well, there you go. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back, and we're going to talk what is local anyway.
Average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, what about it out there? What do you think? Which is more important to the health and well-being of your family and the security of your food chain? Food that is grown locally or food that is grown organically? Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We've got Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle with us today, and we have you. We have a bunch of people on the phone, so let's go to them and see what they have to say. Let's start with Ed. Welcome to The Food Chain, Ed.
Oh, hi.
Go ahead. Fire away.
I heard on your radio station, I think it was from 6 to 7 this morning, they were talking about imported food,
mm-hmm.
and they were saying most all the food that's imported from foreign countries is irradiated to sterilize it from bacteria and bugs and whatever else. And that program is, anyway, they were saying, I would have had some input on this program, whether it's local or imported,
mm-hmm.
because even if it's imported organic, it seems like if it's irradiated, that ought to put in a different category than the stuff that's not irradiated.
They
said the irradiation kills all the enzymes in it and makes it less healthy.
Let's fire that question to Michael and Steve. Michael, let's start with you.
Well, I don't really know. I know that there was a labeling requirement for irradiated food years ago when irradiation was coming online, which was, I believe, the logo was a sunflower.
It's not lawful to sell it as certified organic if it's been irradiated.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that's
the standard. And you, the certifier is supposed to take a good look at it all the way down through the chain of custody.
How much of its value does food lose when it's transported that far and put through that many processes to be made safe so that we can eat it?
Well, I think that's a very fundamental question because the food quality differences between foods that have traveled that far and those that are produced locally and brought directly from the farmer to the consumer. There's an enormous difference in quality. And I think people recognize that, are beginning to recognize that more. Of course, the criticism is that it's easy for those of us who are in California or even on the West Coast to wax poetically about
right.
the wonders of local food, but how about us in, you know, Michigan or Wisconsin? But the reality is now, even that is being, there's many good models now, people who are, you know, there's restaurants like La Trois in Madison, which serves a full Wisconsin-based ingredients menu throughout the year, even in January or February, locally grown. There's people like Elliot Coleman who have demonstrated that year-round production is possible, even in places like Maine, where he farms. So I think that the creativity and ingenuity is kind of blowing that idea away as well.
Okay, let's go to Carolyn. Carolyn, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I live in San Luis Obispo, California,
mm-hmm.
and I'm part of a group of parents and grandparents, and we're calling ourselves slow-grown kids. And we're trying to look at improving, ultimately, our children's eating habits and improving the school lunch program. And one of the things we kind of stumble upon is how we can look at school gardens and the importance of educating our kids through a garden that could be right outside their classroom. So we're trying to find other schools that we can use as models. Aside from Berkeley, we're looking at Ojai, and trying to really partner with our teachers and figuring out how to help our children make better choices. And obviously, the ultimate for us would be local and organic,
yeah.
But to give our kids the opportunity to actually grow things themselves.
Let's throw that to Steve. You're in Ojai, Steve.
Yeah, here the organization is called Food for Thought, and they have a number of gardens in the middle schools and elementary schools.
Okay.
And a fellow I've worked with here, Dave White, is the director of the garden project.
Okay.
And so they have gardens there, and they're trying to teach the institutions and to help the institutions incorporate into their menu the products that are grown there. And so it's been difficult, by and large. I think that's kind of uniform. It's been difficult for the parents and the producers to get a lot of product into the schools because there's been some hesitancy,
right,
on the part of the people who are actually cooking or preparing, handling,
exactly,
the product. So you have to get the food administrators, the administrators of the school, and the folks who work there, the bureaucracy as well, on board before you can expect to see an awful lot of the local product there. And then what are they going to grow for the school that will really, that everybody can take advantage of? So you just can't do 100 linear feet of carrots, but
right,
the kids do like to eat a salad bar. So growing a lot of lettuce, especially, as you can do that in San Luis Obispo almost during, yeah, the entire school year. And so that's what we've learned here, is to identify things that are going to be a winner. And then also I was going to say, we also have a cooperative here called the Gold Coast Growers Cooperative.
Right, okay.
And that's a group of farmers that have a central receiving dock down in Ventura, and then the product then goes out in large quantities to the school district. And that's been one of the best examples of a success story with getting a local product. And a lot of that product is conventionally grown as well.
There you go, Carolyn. Did you get enough information there, sweetie?
Yes, I did.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Folks, Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're talking about food that is local and food that is organic. You know, one time they were the same thing, but no longer, not necessarily so. By golly, they're taking out an organic farm in the middle of South Central Los Angeles and putting in a Walmart. And you know that Walmart's going to sell organic food. And will the people of Watts have the same benefit from the organic food they get from the Walmart? Or will they lose something when they lose the ability to grow that food and supply it to themselves? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Got a few minutes left with Michael Abelman and Steve Sprinkle. This is The Food Chain. I'm Michael Olson, your host for the hour. Let's go straight to the phones and talk with Leanna. Leanna, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
I gotcha.
I'm a member of the Community Food System Project of San Luis Obispo County.
Uh-huh.
And I was very taken by the conventional farmer that spoke up, because we do have a campaign for buying fresh and buying local in this county. And we have a Central Coast Ag Network that is promoting that. And we're trying to get people aware that it's not individual consumers that are going to save these family farms, but developing more direct markets other than just community-supported agriculture boxes,
right,
or individuals going to farmers markets, but institutions like schools, the county government, restaurants, local groceries, chefs.
Well,
you know, all those kinds of things. So I'd like to hear you talk more about that, because
great
that's
comment.
What's going to save both kinds of farmers. And a county government in Iowa recently made a mandate that they would buy only local, but they had to put into it they would go to transitional or conventional. If they could not find an item that was organic, they would still want to buy local.
Buy local. Leanna, thank you for the comment. Stay tuned, girl. Let's go quickly to Mark. Mark, welcome to The Food Chain.
Yeah, Michael, great show. Listen, one of the things that I wanted to bring up was the issue of flavor and the fact that we get such great flavors when we're buying from local farmers. Not only because, you know, they're peaked at a peak, you know, at their peak of ripeness, mm-hmm. And they, but because they also they offer this diverse variety of produce that I don't think the large farm, even organic that are coming from faraway places can do. I don't think they can duplicate that.
Gosh.
In fact, I think those farms are probably even contributing to the loss of flavor.
You know, great comment. I was just up at UC Santa Cruz Farm and Garden Project, and I snatched a carrot out of the ground, and it was so juicy.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
I'm going to go steal another one. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate
sure.
it. We have a few minutes left. Michael Abelman, let me ask you this. Michael Abelman, author of the brand new book.
You have 1 minute remaining on your card.
Looks like we'll get it, though. Michael, local or organic?
You're talking to me. I just...
Yes.
The line gap for a second. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my position is fairly clear. I would rather focus my attention and my emphasis on local.
Good. That's Steve Sprinkle, local or organic?
Organic.
Okay, good. We have a little difference of opinion from two great people, farmers and writers, both
thank
outstanding
you.
In their fields. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today on The Food Chain.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.